Hello and welcome. My name is Rima and I started this podcast because everyone I know has something valuable to say based on their career or lifestyle or where they're at in life right now. And I thought, why not share that? So this is about reconnecting with friends, meeting some new ones perhaps, and sharing some insight along the way. Thank you for listening. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Chatter and Laughs. I'm excited to have my friends Tanya Dodaro and Livia Gruich on the podcast today. The three of us have known each other for many, many years. We have mutual friends, we've worked in the same industry, and we've worked together on and off over the years. Before we get into the podcast, I wanted to talk about my first sponsor, Heart and Sola Canada. For those of you who know me, you know I love fresh flowers. However, this past Mother's Day, I thought I'd try something a little different, and I ordered some flowers from Heart and Sola Canada. These flowers are made from Sola wood. Yes, I said wood, mainly from a plant called cassava. And I have to say, I love them, and everyone I gifted them to loves them as well. And good news for all you listeners, Heart and Sola is offering 10% off until July 31st. Just visit heartandsolacanada.ca and use the word chatter at checkout. And now back to the podcast with Tanya and Livia. To give you a brief background, Tanya and Livia founded the boutique public relations firm in Toronto called OnQ Communications back in 2004. 17 years later, OnQ has evolved and continues to successfully provide brands across the globe with both public relations and also social media marketing. Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Oh, it's such a pleasure, Rima. It's always nice to chat with you.
Super excited.
So you both launched OnQ Communications 17 years ago, as we said, while you were both in your early 20s, and it's been thriving ever since then. Tell us a story and let's start at the beginning. How did OnQ come to be?
You're taking us way back, Rima. So you want the whole story, right?
I do. Like, start from the top.
So I was dating Tanya's brother at the time. So that's how I got to know Tanya. And we were, talking about, obviously, our complementing backgrounds. So my background's in marketing and Tanya's is in media and PR, and she'll talk to you more about that. Mm-hmm. But we got to know each other and love spending time together. And I think the actual moment that always stands out for me, we were at a bridal shower and we were just like having this orange sherbet, and it was one of those moments that just stick out for you where it was like, should we launch something together? Like, we have all these skill sets that if we combine, you know, we could help companies grow in innovative ways. And what a better time to do it than now. And that's kind of how it started. That's the long and short of it. And the rest is history.
That's so funny how you actually remember the drink that you were drinking when you had this conversation.
I amaze myself that I don't remember a lot of details of important things in my life, but things like that, I was like, yep, I remember exactly.
I mean, it was a light bulb moment. Isn't that what it's called?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And it's funny. I heard somewhere, and I can't remember where now, but they always say the memories that you do have are always connected to emotion. So yeah. It was obviously an emotional conversation that had an impact.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was a shared vision. Like, I think we both knew we wanted to work in the field of communications. We had similar dreams and I think aspirations for our career. Mm-hmm. And I think too, like, we were young, we had little responsibility at the time. And I think it was like, it was more of like a feeling, that little voice deep in your gut that says, this is it. Yeah. And that was it. And then we just kind of had to wait for the right moment to jump in. And then we did.
Yeah. And you were working in TV at the time, right, Tanya?
I was. So I started my career in PR. I was working for Ernst & Young in the PR department on the Entrepreneur of the Year awards. Mm-hmm. And I had an amazing mentor who was a journalist, and I think it just helped draw me to that field. I was a valedictorian in grade 6. Liv knows this story, but I was a valedictorian in grade six, and one of the tasks was like we had to show up portraying what we wanted to be when we grew up. And I had no idea. I was like, all my friends were like, we want to be a doctor, we want to be a veterinarian, we want to be, you know, a teacher. And I'm like, none of those appealed to me. And then one day my parents were watching TV and I'm like, what are those people called that are on TV? That's what I want to be. And so I was drawn to that, and eventually did my degree in journalism. But I wanted something different at that point, and just life circumstances, I guess, drew me to go back into PR, which obviously, you know, gave me, I got insider information, you know, going into journalism first, understanding how the newsroom works, and then being able to apply that, you know, in business. So that was really valuable.
Absolutely. And Liv, you were on the business side at the time. I went to
Schulich and I studied business, and it was kind of process of elimination that I figured out accounting's not my thing, neither is finance. Like, I'm glad I know it, but no thanks. And I chose marketing, and my dream job kind of exiting Schulich was working for General Mills. So at the time I was working for General Mills, but it was called consumer business development. So it was marketing mixed with sales, and it was the kind of job where I wasn't in the office 9 to 5. I was in charge of a number of stores and a number of brands within the stores. And I think that's what showed me that I really like kind of setting my own hours, setting my goals, reaching them. And I kind of thought everybody loves that, but I learned after that not everybody loves it. But that's kind of what got me excited about doing my own thing. And I think when Tanya and I started talking about it, it became clear that, you know, if not now, when? I mean, other people would argue, you know, maybe get more experience under your belt. But I felt that throughout university, like I had worked for an ad firm earlier on, and I had a bunch of internships that I really enjoyed that exposed me to advertising and to marketing campaigns. Never PR though. So it was really interesting when Tanya and I started talking about all the different services we would offer, and you know, our complementing backgrounds made it work for us. So it was
Obviously the right decision.
It was the right decision, right? You kind of say, let's do it, and then figure out the details.
Well, credit to you both, because that is brave, though. That does take courage to do that at such a young age, right? With, like you said, without the experience. So good for you both. Here you are 17 years later and, you know, on cue, still going strong. If I was to ask you both, what was the most valuable lesson that you've learned along this journey, what would it be?
I think for me, it's adaptability. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've had a roller coaster of a ride, as expected in the world of entrepreneurship. But the ability to get back up every time you get knocked down is ultimately like what makes you fly.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the most difficult lesson to learn, but also the most valuable lesson. Yeah.
There must have been moments where you wanted to give up over the years.
Honestly, no. Mm-hmm. And it was never really an option to fail. It was just, you know, how are we going to make this work?
How are we going to move forward?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's so funny. How about you, Liv? We must think alike, Tanya, because I was thinking adaptability too, but in a different way too. I think, you know, sort of coming out of business school, you always think, okay, I need to have my business plan. This is how it's going to work. 1, 2, 3, get the office, get the loans that you need. Mm-hmm. And sure, you can plan for some things, but other things you can't plan for. And it's just, I think we're in the fact that we're a smaller agency starting out allowed us to move quickly and change with the times. And that's what kept us successful for so long. Mm-hmm. And also I'll add one more lesson that you know, so I have a different lesson. I think it's also the people that you work with are just the most important thing. So picking, you know, from obviously the right partner to the right employees. I know that my biggest fear starting out, and I'm sure with a lot of entrepreneurs, you're always scared that, oh my gosh, how am I going to get clients? But you know, you do a good job for a client, they refer you to others. Getting clients was never an issue. Like, probably the worst marketing we've ever done was for ourselves.
Yeah, which is always the case, right?
Exactly. But the lesson is just, you know, the be smart in hiring people that are, you know, sometimes smarter than you, because your company is as good as the people that you're going to work with. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you find there were challenges that you faced at the beginning of your career, considering, first of all, you were quite young entrepreneurs, and second, you were young female entrepreneurs? If so, how did you manage through those hurdles?
I think Tanya and I always used to laugh because this is, it annoyed us all the time because people would call us girls.
Yeah.
And, you know, thinking back, I'm not sure what people should have called us. Like, if today someone will call me ma'am, that would annoy me, right?
Do you remember what
I would love to be called a girl. The funny thing is, when you're in your 20s, you're like, don't call me a girl. Now I'm like, hey, you can call me a cute girl. Or
well, that's just the thing. I was looking back the other day and I was thinking, well, like, what did we want them to call us? Okay, call us by our names, obviously, but when people refer to you, it's okay, so the girls. And I think, you know, it's all how you deal with it, right? Like, I think we proved ourselves in terms of doing a good job for clients. So it's just, if it ever bothered us, I'm not sure it was something that needed to bother us looking back, because you prove yourself in terms of what you offer and doing a good job. So
yeah. Well, looking back, I mean, we're looking back quite a while, and that the business environment and communication within that environment has changed so much. I mean, if somebody called, you know, young entrepreneurs girls today, they would definitely get a response. I feel you know,
I agree. I think that's also just mindset. Like, you know, I think it's the confidence that you have, you know, being a female. Like, is it a drawback? Is it a benefit? I think it's all mindset at the end of the day, and how you walk into every one of those conversations.
Mm-hmm. And context too. I mean, is that person saying it in any sort of negative fashion, or is it just an unconscious bias of some sort, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I have this vivid memory myself of when one of the times that we were working together, we had a launch for a book event.
Oh, yeah.
That I was working on with you. And I remember you both adamant that we all wear a suit because we were all so young at that time. And, you know, it was almost like the suit was what was going to make us
more
professional.
Yep.
And I think back on it now, and I remember even in my head thinking, do I really have to wear a suit to this? I guess so.
You know what? I think when we first started, like, we were in our early 20s, just starting a business, like, naively ready to make, like, turn hundreds into millions, you know? And I think the problem or I guess the mindset that we had at that time is like, we're trying to break into this industry of, like, I like to call it like a sea of salt and pepper haired individuals who were easily in the industry for over 20 years. And here we are, you know, with less than 5 years. And so, like, it was almost like a mental hurdle that we had to overcome. And, like, why would anyone choose us, like, versus our competitors who have more knowledge, more experience? And I think too, like, but the other thing is, like, yes, they had more experience and knowledge, but we had, like, the go-getter. Yeah. Like, we were ready to, like, you know, put blood, sweat, and tears into everything and every project. And, you know, it, for me anyway, and I think, Liv, for you too, we had a shift in our mindset. We were lunching with one of our mentors, and he helped us see things in a different way. And sometimes that's all you need, just to make things click. And he made us realize, so don't forget, we were starting a business when, like, Facebook was just taking off, and our generation was really the first generation of Facebook. And so we understood it. We were using it every day in our lives. And so we kind of looked at that and said, you know, or he helped us see that, you know, that gave us an advantage. You know, people were looking to us for this information and, you know, and that's really kind of where our opportunity to shine kind of was.
Yeah. And looking back on it now, I mean, I feel like when we all look back on the industry of PR and social media, essentially we're talking about great ideas, right? And fresh ideas and the hustle of it all. I mean, I self-published a book in my early 20s and I knew nothing about PR and I managed to get myself on Breakfast Television and CFRB 1010. I mean, it's not to say that there isn't a skill and a talent that goes along with that, but truly, it's just to say that just because someone has been doing it for so many years doesn't mean that someone new can't come in and still kind of target that same way.
It's all attitude. It's all attitude.
I was going to say the exact same thing. Just having that go-getter attitude, which I think in the beginning as, you know, young girls, whether we like being called that or not, we used it to our advantage and we were hungry and we were passionate and, you know, we were ready to explore new tools. So when social media started becoming more popular, actually before it started becoming more popular, it was just like, hey, let's give it a try. So I think we used something that maybe we saw as a negative for good reason or not and used it to our advantage. And here we are.
A quote that I love is, failure in life is inevitable, but giving up is unacceptable.
So, I mean, I feel like you've already given so much advice, but if you were to give advice to someone, to young entrepreneurs who are just starting out today, what would you say to them? Of course, learn to adapt, as you said, you know, have that confidence. Is there anything else you would add?
I refer to my favorite quote with this one, which is, whether you think you can or can't, you're right. And it obviously speaks to having confidence. And it's taken me through a lot of situations where, you know, you have to remember that you're doing this for a reason. So especially in the beginning, if you're doubting yourself, if you think there's other people out there, other companies that are bigger or better or whatnot, just remembering to sort of stick true to yourself and what you have to offer is unique. And that way you will succeed no matter what.
Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it's really like, don't spend all of your time thinking about an idea. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just have to jump in. Like, of course, do your homework, all of your due diligence. I think too, like, I would tell my younger self, make sure your business is solving a problem. Make sure it's scalable. My dad always used to tell me that success is a simple algorithm. And I tell my girls this like literally every day. So as long as you work hard, you know, eventually you'll see the results and then everything else will fall into place.
Yeah. And I kind of agree with the don't overthink it aspect because, you know, if you overthink everything, you will never get anything done. If I overthought about things, I would never have had a book and I would never have started a podcast.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's a good one as well. So you were successful business partners for many years and your sister-in-laws, as you mentioned, live at the same time. Any advice for those who are working with family?
We've been asked that a lot.
I'm sure you have. I probably should have started with that question.
Sometimes, like I remember telling clients and colleagues we were sister-in-laws because like sometimes we just wouldn't tell people because like we didn't want it to be awkward. And we would get this like surprised look or a unique comment, you know, and you know, I guess it is the norm, but I guess it isn't at the same time. And I guess sometimes we wouldn't necessarily, it wouldn't be the first thing we tell people because we didn't want to be stereotyped at the same time.
Yeah.
But I mean, the first word that always comes to mind and, you know, we've used it often, it's a long one, but a good one, compartmentalization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like by definition, it means to divide or categorize. And we learned to compartmentalize like personal life and business life. And it made our relationship easy at work and outside of work. I mean, if there was ever a disagreement with like business direction at work, you know, we would make sure never to bring it up, you know, during Christmas celebrations.
Yeah.
And really, like, that's what's worked for us. And we were able to keep, thankfully, a strong business relationship and strong personal relationship after 17 years. I mean, we would see each other every day for like 8 hours a day.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say we see each other more than, you know, you our see spouses. Husband some days. You have to like each other first and foremost. I remember actually Tanya saying in her wedding speech, at my wedding, she said, you know, what makes us good is that we always find reasons to celebrate. Like, find a reason where there isn't one. So sure, there's going to be lots of things that you can dwell on. And, you know, like in a marriage, you kind of pick your battles. And luckily, we saw things most of the time, you know, in a similar way. And when we didn't, we talked it out and we came to an agreement. But I think the thing that really kept us going and kept us having fun for so long was that we did find reasons to celebrate in the office, you know, when there weren't any. Like, yeah. So just having fun together. You spend too much time at work not to have fun. So
yeah. Yes, having, I agree.
Yeah. Having a good partner that you can have fun with and get through all the work too is definitely a bonus. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that you talk about compartmentalizing, because I feel like I do that just as a mother now and as a wife and, you know, in work. I feel that I have to compartmentalize all those areas just to stay sane, mm-hmm. you know. Otherwise, it's just, it gets to be too much.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about the services of OnQ. The company started primarily, as we mentioned, as a PR agency. This was back when social media wasn't really a factor. And now your services include digital media and influencer relations as well as PR. It must have been an interesting journey watching social media and influencer dynamics emerge in this space. I know it was for me an interesting time. Has traditional PR changed forever as a result of this, in your opinion?
I think PR looks totally different these days. You know, like I mentioned before, I started my career at the other side of the table as a journalist. And sometimes I look back and I just can't believe how different the landscape is today. I think there's many factors at play, but I would say perhaps the rise of citizen journalism has had a large, if not the largest, impact. I think these days, like, everyone has the ability to become a journalist in their own way. And then obviously with the rise of influencers, those who have a large following, they've now become new age journalists telling their audiences about the newest and the latest.
Yeah.
So I think that's just really rocked the industry and just changed the way we have to look at things. Mm-hmm. You know, most recently, I think the industry has also seen a shift through the pandemic. We've worked with a lot of clients over the pandemic, and with everything going virtual, we found that media tends to fall back on the on those trusted sources for good information and opinions. And it's been even more difficult for like newbie brands to break into the media landscape.
Right.
Obviously, coupled with the fact that, you know, news is being dominated by COVID-19 updates and information. So it makes it really tough for brands, for new brands.
Well, it's also the vibe of the year, right?
Yeah.
It's a sensitive year. So it's hard to talk about anything other than COVID, especially when things are up and down so much, right?
For sure.
So approaching any PR, any media during this time, it's different.
But I think it's okay at the same time, because the PR industry has been the same for so long that this might bring on a refresh that might have been needed.
Yeah. Well, you're making me think about that ad, that video that came out with
the gum.
The gum. Yeah. Was it Wrigley?
Oh yeah. God, I was crying and laughing at the same time.
Me too. And I thought, wow, like we all needed this right now.
Yeah.
And all it was in the end was an ad about gum, right?
Yeah.
And it made me thin. And the music was classic music. It wasn't anything new age. It was just a commercial at the end of the day. And it just brought all those emotions out, right? So there is a place in a way for that kind of traditional platform.
I think COVID has and will continue to change everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rima, you're making me think about the question. I remember teaching a course at Schulich Executive Education Center. So it was a marketing communications course, and it focused mostly on PR at the time, but we were starting to talk about social media. And I remember there was one person in the class, I won't name the company, but I remember he put up his hand and he was just, so is this social media stuff going to go away? Like, I don't want to waste my time basically, you know, venturing mm-hmm. into this stuff if I don't have to. And it's just crazy because from there, you know, I basically built a whole course just around social media because it grew so much. It couldn't be part of a marketing communications course anymore. Yeah. And then I remember the question came, well, if we get negative comments, it's okay to just delete them, right? And no, it's not okay because somebody actually already saw it and, you know, millions of people might have seen it. And when you ask, you know, how PR has changed, I think it's no longer like just a pitch the way we used to look at it. I think it's a conversation and it has to be a conversation. And if brands don't get that and they just kind of continue selling as opposed to having a conversation, whether it's with your consumers directly or with the media, if you're trying to get coverage, you're sort of missing the point. So mm-hmm. media is real. I mean, social media has allowed us to have the tools necessary so we can have that conversation.
Yeah. And on a larger scale, right? Back in the day, if there was any sort of negative feedback about something, someone sending in a letter. And nowadays, that's not the case, right? They're going straight to social media and it's getting blown up and potentially going viral. And so, mm-hmm. you know, you're taking me back to those days where we were trying to pitch social media to brands. It's so difficult at that time.
Yeah. It's so funny. I remember learning about this concept of citizen journalism in journalism school. Mm-hmm. And at the time it was this thing in the future, like, and it's here and we're talking about it right now. And it's amazing to see how much has evolved in a relatively short period of time. Mm-hmm.
I mean, and with that comes some, you know, some downsides where, you know, obviously if everybody has an opinion, it could be anybody that has an opinion, right? So there is that whole aspect of checking your sources that not everybody does. So, you know, obviously that's something that's a whole other conversation, but there's a responsibility there as well. But now the responsibility isn't just on the journalists, it's on the individuals themselves, because mm-hmm. before you would just pick up the Globe and Mail or, you know, a newspaper, or you'll watch the news and you would feel that all those sources have been checked, right? Whereas now it's a whole different case with citizen journalism.
Totally true.
So what tips do you have for brands that are looking to get exposure today?
I think that this new pandemic landscape will make brands work much harder to rise to the top. There's a lot of noise, and breaking through the noise is going to be even more difficult and already is more difficult. I think there's just new demands, and the way that information is being consumed really allows for the best of the best to shine. Mm-hmm. And I think if you genuinely have a great product or a great service with a great message, you will break through the clutter and people will want to hear your story. But it definitely pushes brands to focus on their messaging and how, you know, they can stand out. And of course, if that doesn't work, you know, mm-hmm. if you can't beat them, join them, figure out how to ride the wave and join in on the existing conversation within the media.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really about, they've just got to work harder at, you know, their core messages, mm-hmm. you know, their values, what makes them stand apart from their competitors.
Understanding their brand, like fully.
And what their brand means to potential consumers.
Yeah.
And then how to convey that information.
Which a lot of people struggle with.
Yeah. That's why they hire PR firms.
Exactly. Like OnQ Communications.
Yeah. Exactly.
Liv, did you have anything to add?
I was just going to say, just, I mean, it hasn't changed. You always have to offer value, but that's, I mean, being able to show that today, because you have, you know, thousands, millions of people following you, if a company can show how they're actually adding value, not just selling. So, you know, what are they doing to help people during the pandemic? People are much more likely to form relationships and maintain relationships and be loyal to those brands. So it's, I think, more important today than ever to be authentic. It's been said before, but offer value, don't just sell, because people can see right through that.
Yeah. And if I was to give any advice just from my own experience in marketing and PR, I mean, I would say to understand obviously what your brand is, what it stands for, but also who your audience is. Because once you figure out who your audience is, you know where to look. I mean, back in the day, do you remember us walking over to Shoppers Drug Mart to find all the to get all the magazines
yes.
and go through all the magazines to figure out who the editors were? I mean, I think about how the tools that we have today, like all you have to do is go on Twitter and figure out who's writing for who and who's writing for what. But once you figure out who your audience is and what they're reading and what they're looking at, then you can figure out who to approach, right?
Absolutely. And that's what I mean too when I say offer value. I mean, with Twitter, if you're following the right hashtags, you know, reporters can come to you. So their job in a way became much easier as well, because if they know they can count on you for whatever topic they're writing about next, their job became much easier. And your job to get that media attention obviously became easier as well. So
The one thing I learned in PR was always remember that they want to hear from you. They need a story. They need that content. So if you are confident, as you said, in the value that you're offering, then don't worry about approaching media with it.
That's so true, Rima. And I think people tend to forget that. Yes. A lot of brands think it's like almost this war, like we've got to get in. And you're right. It's actually a relationship where one relies on the other to survive.
Exactly. So 17 years later, you both have the title of mom added to your repertoire. What has that experience been like for you both? Any tips on the ongoing goal of work-life balance that we all strive for?
We're still trying to figure it out.
I think it's funny because we always, you know, you probably heard us refer to OnQ as our baby because we had OnQ together so early on and we gave it our all. And it's very similar to, obviously, when you have a kid, you wanted to give it your all as well. So how do you make that work? And we both had kids while running OnQ. And I think the nice thing was being able to rely on each other and being able to take the time to spend with our kids so we didn't feel that we're giving up on the company or giving up on the family. So figuring out that work-life balance, you know, any tips? I mean, if you're lucky enough to work with people that can cover for each other and have a plan in place, you can definitely, definitely achieve both.
Yeah. I think it's also about making your business work for you. Like as an entrepreneur, you're not working less. In fact, like I would argue you're probably working more. I mean, the difference is you hopefully, you know, will be able to have the ability to work on your own time, which can make all the difference. I mean, I'm sure, I mean, I think whether you're a business owner or you work for someone, this year has showed us that like, you've got to make your career work for you.
Yeah.
Like this year was a juggling act for all of us. I think if anyone told us 2 years ago, you know, you'll have to be working and homeschooling and keep sane at the same time, we would have thought it was the impossible task. But, you know, here we are a year later and somehow we've figured out a way to move forward and function on a day-to-day basis.
I think it also goes back to sort of that, you know, work hard, play hard mentality that I try to teach my kids too. Like there's a time to work and give it your all and put in the hours. And then there's a time to, it's much harder these days, obviously, because we're connected, but, you know, put the phone down and make sure you are there for your family, like fully present, not just I'm there, but I'm checking my email. So
yeah,
that's how we try.
Yeah. And I would say, I mean, I think the three of us have been fortunate to understand the value of entrepreneurship at a young age, obviously. But for those who are working for corporations, I think that it's no different now in the sense that if the environment that you're working in is not fitting within what you want your lifestyle to be, then find somewhere else to work. Because I always question or wonder what keeps people tied to something that is making them so unhappy. And I think that there is nothing wrong with moving on and or moving forward. And even as an entrepreneur, I mean, for some people, like if it's not working anymore, then move on, right? And I think a lot of people are afraid to do that.
I was just going to say, it's the fear of change. I have this conversation with my friends all the time, and you know, they all complain they're not happy or something about their job they don't like. And my answer is always, well, do something about it then, exactly. Right? You live one life, we're all getting older, do something about it. Yeah. And usually when someone decides to change, I don't think they look back and regret it, hopefully, but yeah. It's the fear of change. It's not easy to change.
Well, usually people, when they make that change, it's due to some dire circumstances that they've reached a point that, you know, they have to, right? I always feel like don't be afraid of moving on. Like this is your life in the end, whether it's your business or the business that you're working for, you know,
I agree. And I think like looking through like, you know, an optimistic lens, you want, you know, if you're enjoying your work, you'll feel like it's not work.
Yeah.
And I know it's very optimistic to say, but I felt that many times in my life, fortunately. And it just, it's a completely different mindset. You know, it's a place of happiness. It's a place of joy. It's a place of waking up and not being able to wait to see like what the day's adventures will bring.
Yeah.
And so to strive, you know, to create that situation in your life is so ideal.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I'm sure there are circumstances I should mention where some people have no choice in what they're doing, right?
Of course.
But sometimes you don't realize that you actually do have more of a choice than you think, right? So just looking for that outlet. Okay, so are there any resources or podcasts that you recommend to listeners and brands that are interested in delving into the world of PR and social media, or even any resources that have motivated you on a personal level throughout your career?
For me, mentors has always been a really, has been a go-to. You know, emulating what others are doing, watching and learning from what others are doing. You know, at the same time, I love reading, like anything, everything. I usually have, I'm one of those people who have like two or three books going on at the same time. And it's like the flavor of the day. But like, you know, the basics, like I love Tony Robbins, everything he's about. Recently started listening to Entrepreneur on Fire. Anything that's like motivational for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you?
I find I start my day with, it's called a daily quote. I'm all about the quotes. So it's literally while I'm in the bathroom brushing my teeth, if there isn't a kid running in, I usually have a podcast on. That's the daily quote. And it just gets you, you know, they say the simple quote, whatever it is, and then they discuss it. And it just gets you in that right mind frame. Same like Tanya, I mean, I find I rely on books if there's ever a question or just to see what's kind of going on out there. I love writing, so just sometimes looking back on my own journaling will get me through an experience and remind me where I was and where I'm going.
I've actually heard that a lot about journaling and writing things down and how it makes a difference. I'm not very good at that myself. Mm-hmm. But it is something that I've thought about. And again, it goes back to listening to something about memory and how the way you remember something is different when you write it down. It changes. So if you don't write it down, the next time you think about it, it could be in a different way.
Absolutely. I do this funny thing where, like, I have a journal where I'm supposed to write just, you know, basically two sentences per day, because after having kids, I found I couldn't do any more than that. I would just skip the days if I thought I would, you know, be able to write more than that. And if I skip a couple of days, instead of starting from where, you know, today is Tuesday, but I didn't write since last Thursday, I'll actually feel guilty and I'll go back and I'll try to fill in the days. And it's not the same as if you write it that day, right? Something has already changed. Something else has happened in the meantime. So it's so important to sort of write your feelings in that day, in that moment as they happen. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times I'm in the middle of writing a book now and I think back to things that happened, you know, even if it's last year, never mind 20 years ago. And I know I'm remembering it with a lens of a 40-year-old now, as opposed to the person that was living it at the time.
Yeah.
Which is okay. Sometimes it depends what view you want to take.
Yeah. And you know, we all had diaries when we were kids.
I know.
Right? Didn't we all have a diary? So why don't we have diaries anymore? Like, why does that have to stop? Like, I think about that sometimes.
That's exactly it. This is my diary. But instead of, I actually just, you know, during the pandemic, cleaned out the storage and found like three boxes of diaries from age 10 to, I don't know, when I was getting married. And yeah. I used to write pages and pages. And now, like I said, if I write two lines, I'm happy. So.
And writing in the diary was a form of meditation in mm-hmm. many ways. Not that we knew that back then, but we know that now, right? Mm-hmm.
I think it's also an interesting like perspective when you could like visit with your old self mm-hmm. almost. And, you know, I've recently shared some of my diaries with my girls when I was mm-hmm. their age. And sometimes they'll tell me things and I'll just, like, I'm looking at it through my perspective at my age now. And I'm just like, guys, don't worry, you know, you'll be fine. Yeah. But then I'll go back and I'll read my diary and like looking at it, the concerns they have are legitimate concerns because I had the same concerns. So it's like visiting with your old self.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's so easy to forget. And yeah. visiting with your old self reminds you like, no, this was actually a huge deal.
Yeah.
If you fight with your best friend at school, that'll ruin your month. You know,
yes, right.
That's all you care about at that age.
Yeah. That emotional impact was so high, right? That mm-hmm. we forget about it in our busy day-to-day mom lives, right? But it was a big deal, you know, to have a fight with your best friend.
Yeah.
Or whatever it happens to yeah. be, right?
Or but whatever it happens to be. Exactly. Bad grade or whatever, right?
Things you told your diary that you didn't tell your mom.
Yeah. Well, look at all the creative works that have come from people going back at looking at their diary. I don't know if any of you have read or listened to Matthew McConaughey's new book, Green Lights. So it's really, really good. I highly recommend it. But essentially, he went away for 2 or 3 weeks and he went back and looked at all the things that he wrote down throughout his life.
Wow.
And he made that into his book. And even with Taylor Swift, I think I watched yeah. her documentary. I mean, she went back and was reading her diary and creating music from that, I believe. So
my daughter just did her book report on Taylor Swift and she was talking about how she gets inspiration from her own life. And, you know, I'm like, oh, now she's going to be a singer. Careful who your role models are at that age, right?
So what's next? What do the next 17 years look like for Livia and Tanya?
Well, I actually took a step back from OnQ about 2 years ago. And we were, you know, talking about change earlier on. And it was probably the, you know, the hardest decision ever to make to take a step back from your firstborn.
Yeah.
But the next 17 years for me, I mean, I've always loved public speaking. I was involved with Toastmasters from when I was young and I kind of kept that going. And I decided, I mean, about a year ago, I started having the conversations with my kids, I mean, they were seeing me do public speeches and they started having an interest in it. And I started looking into them becoming more confident through taking public speaking, and there really wasn't anything out there for them. So it led me to start a public speaking course at their school first, and then we took it online. And it's not anything that I wanted to turn into a business. It was just something that I was doing for sort of for the love of doing something with my girls and having them gain confidence. But I think during the pandemic and seeing that it really gives me such great satisfaction to watch little ones succeed through the art of public speaking and gain confidence. Probably when I look at the next few years, when life slows down a little bit in terms of kids and everything else, it's probably something I'll choose to pursue and do something with.
That sounds amazing, actually. I mean, I love the sound of that initiative. And we should mention that you've been teaching at Schulich for many years as well. I feel like public speaking is it's part of your path.
It is. And I didn't, you know, it was always something that I did and I enjoyed. And I think it'll probably be something I continue doing. I mean, I wanted to take a step back from, you know, just being busy and having this like, oh, when I have time, I'll do, you know, this or this or this. And I think we're always, you know, in a rush to what the next adventure is in our lives. At least I felt that way. I always felt like, okay, I'm taking a step back from this thing, but what's next? I have this idea. How do I make it happen? Mm-hmm. And just recently, I think we were talking about writing, through deciding to write a book, because it was something that, you know, was on my bucket list and something I always said I wanted to do. It gave me a lot of time to explore, and all of us have had time this year probably for self-discovery, more time with our own thoughts than we do usually. And I think it's, you know, it's not something everyone always talks about. It's usually like, what's next? What's the next big thing? But sometimes the next big thing is just kind of being in the moment. Like for all three of us right now, we have little kids. They're not going to be little forever. And for me, at least, it's really just being in the moment and not having that mom guilt all the time to kind of rush from one thing to the next. So I feel that understanding that when the time is right, things happen easier than other times. Like we were talking about, you know, with On Cue, it was that one conversation in the beginning and it was, okay, let's just do it now. Why not? So when things are meant to happen, they happen easy and you have fun doing it. So yeah, I think Confident Young Voices at some point is something I'll definitely pursue on a more full-time basis. At the moment, I'm just having fun with it, with the kids and with writing and enjoying it all.
Very cool. Tanya, how about you?
I guess over the last 2 years, I've been leading On Cue, and it's been great. I think, you know, COVID has changed a lot for On Cue. You know, the first thing for people to kind of pause was their marketing when everything came to a halt back in March. But, you know, now we've definitely seen over the last, 6 to 9 months, a comeback. And I feel like I've learned so much in the last year. I feel this new sense of optimism. I feel like I've got insights from, I guess, my past and my present. And I've actually decided that over the next 6 months, I will be slowly transitioning out of the CEO role at On Cue.
Okay.
And I'll still be on the board and will be consulting as necessary, but I'm actually in the process of transferring leadership. So 100% affiliated with the business, but out, I guess, less involved in the day-to-day.
Yep.
And I'm super excited to be knee deep in founding two new businesses.
That is amazing.
And I, you know, this is my silver lining with COVID. I don't remember being this inspired since like my 20s. Hmm. And both businesses are, I guess, a marriage of my past and present in terms of career. And both are born from, I would say, my observations over the last 17 years, helping emerging businesses stand out from a crowd. you know, platforms are changing, journalism looks totally different, and it's time that the field of communications gets a refresh. And my hope is that these new businesses to be will be on this will be on this frontier. So unfortunately, I can't disclose any more on that right now, but please stay tuned. I am like beyond excited. I'm also authoring a unique book on entrepreneurship. And I've actually decided that it's going to be a collective of multiple female entrepreneurs and hopefully serve as an inspiration to other females. So right now, my working title is Where's Your Boat Headed?
I love that.
Yeah.
That is amazing. And I feel like we should recognize that succession is something that entrepreneurs and many businesses strive for and struggle with. But the two of you have managed to build something with OnQ Communications where you're able to pass it over to somebody else and it still continue. And I feel like you guys need to congratulate yourselves for that. And you need to take that credit because that is not an easy thing to do.
Thanks, Rima. It's finding a reason to celebrate, right? If we were in person, we'd be celebrating right now for sure.
Okay. Do you have anything else to add?
I think, you know, you've taken us through the last, 20 years. It was quite a ride. I really enjoyed kind of looking back and remembering our experiences together and just seeing how, the definition of success for all of us really changes through the years. And it was a nice walk down memory lane. Thank you.
You're welcome. It was a nice walk for me too, because I was a part of it here and there.
I think that's the amazing part is that, you know, we've known each other for so long and we've seen each other through the beginning of our careers, through the childbearing years, and now kind of coming out of that. And I guess almost looking at, you know, different stages in our life and, you know, next steps in our career.
It's amazing. It's a wonderful journey. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
Same. Thank you, Rima, for this opportunity.
It was really welcome. Amazing. Thank you for participating.